Okay, thank you everybody. I'd like to declare this ordinary meeting of Central Tablelands Water open and thank everyone for your attendance. And in opening the meeting, I'd like to acknowledge the Wiradjuri people, the traditional custodians of the land on which we meet and on which all our constituent councils regularly meet, and acknowledge their custodianship of this land and, very relevantly, these waters over many tens of thousands of years, and pay my respects to any Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people present or listening to this broadcast. According to the meeting statement, I'd just like to remind everyone that this meeting is being recorded and the recording will be available on Council's website within a week or two of the date of this meeting. Apologies, Mr. General Manager.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, we've got one apology today from Councillor Marlene Nash.
Would you like to move that be accepted? Moved by Councillor Best, seconded by Councillor Rawson. As in favour?
Aye. And we wish her and her husband well.
Yes, hear, hear. Mm. Confirmation minutes of the previous meeting, they have been circulated. Would someone like to move they be accepted as a correct record? Councillor Rawson, seconded Councillor Ewan. Any comments in relation to the minutes? Those in favour?
Aye.
Thank you, that's carried. Any matters arising from the minutes that anyone would like to raise that's not otherwise dealt with on the agenda? I think not. We will move on. Disclosures of interest. Do we have any disclosures of interest?
No, we don't.
Thank you. Move on. Public forum. I have no public forum. Chairman's minute. There is a chairman's minute in confidential, but otherwise there is no chairman's minute. Yep. Councillor representation. If I can lead off there, I might, rather than have to write this down, I'll send you the list, but there was a fair bit the 2nd of November, the JO Water Portfolios Portfolio Mayor's meeting, 3rd of November, the media event at Suma Park Dam, followed by our workshop, the 12th to the 14th November, the local government conference, 21st to the 23rd of November, JO board meeting and a session at Parliament House, 1st of December, another JO Water Mayor's meeting, 1st of December, the CW Christmas party. Yes, and that's it. Anyone else like to contribute their representation? I think everyone.
I think most of us were at the ministerial thing at Suma Park.
Yep.
So same for me for that. I was at the Local Government New South Wales Conference representing Cabon, but also representing us. Was it a Christmas party, Grenfell? I'm not sure if that counts.
Of course it counts.
Well, it counts.
It counts as an important event. I think that might be it for me.
I have Christmas party and Russell Barnes. Is that what you said first?
Yes.
Yeah. Same too?
Yes.
Yeah. And you were at Suma Park. You went to Suma Park, didn't you?
What Suma Park?
Park.
Yeah.
The media event.
The media event.
Yes, definitely. Yeah. I was there. And also there was a webinar for DPI that I was on. But I can't
give you the details.
Send the details through. Anyone else want to mention anything?
Similar sort of thing. But just a question regarding... So when it's reported, you know, as Councillor Rawson said about representing CTW as well as the council, is that correct though or not? Because you're actually going as CTW representatives or as a Cabon representative?
I can put it in there that attended the conference representing Cabon Council. I'll just mention.
Councillor
Cook and Councillor Best, understand you represented CTW at the Water Bottle Rollout Program in Grenfell.
Oh, yeah.
Incredible as well.
Yeah, I was only in Incredible, Condi, and Dugong.
Yeah.
And I think you already.
Yeah, that was.
You've used the previous one.
Well, good. While we're talking about that, can I just get councillors' feedback on whether you find this a useful agenda item? I know in our council we don't do that. I think Kabon does.
We do it religiously.
Yes.
And it used to be fairly informal, but now it's quite formal, and we list everything that we do, and particularly as we've been in Gabon in the last year in particular, there's been a lot of things.
Mm.
I think it's a good way of telling the public that we actually are doing things that, yeah, apart from just attending council meetings, there are other things that happen within council, and we are making representations on the behalf of the community in different forums. So I think that's a good way of recording that.
I think so too, in the sense that I guess if there's the opportunity for the, as we sit around here this morning, if myself or anyone wants to ask a question back to that person that attended, just sort of probably keeps everyone well communicated if you're unable to attend, or if there isn't something that concerns you or you're interested in, you get direct feedback from the representative.
Okay, that's good.
I was just going to say, under the standing report, which is the Victorian-based report, but it's still about, I suppose, in normal terms, it's KPIs for councillors, and it's who turns up to what is a KPI that they're looking at now, of who's turning up to do things other than just the meeting or that.
Yep.
So it will be coming out, I think, probably New South Wales will probably adopt that as well.
Mm.
Okay, that's feedback. Thank you. We will continue to follow that agenda item. Notices of motion?
No, I haven't received.
No notices of motion. Now we get to reports of staff. Are we going to change the order slightly so that number 12.8, the financial statements and the auditor's report, we will deal with that first. And in so doing, I would like to welcome Katie Henry, who is going to take us through our financial statements and some of the high points, or maybe low points, as a result of the audit. Thanks.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. I can tell you when to change. That's fine. So I just... I wanted to thank you for the invitation today to come and present to you all and discuss the results of the financial statements this year, as well as the report on the conduct of the audit. As Mr. Chairman mentioned, I'm from Intentis, I'm the audit manager there, and I've been involved with the CTW audit for a number of years now. I've just got a few points here that I was going to run through with you. They're general local government points from the Audit Officer's report for 2022. There's a slight delay in getting that out. I'll run through the high-level summary, but if you'd like more detail, it's available on their website. So just as the high-level sector-wide themes, they noted that asset valuations result in the highest proportion of prior period errors and audit findings across the local government sector. Asset management and integrity or completeness of the asset records also led to the majority of the qualifications in the internal audit reports. Obviously, this is a direct line through to the RFS assets, which you probably are all aware of in your roles in other councils, more so than CTW, but I just thought I'd mention that one in there. Cybersecurity, which is a hot topic across all local government councils. Almost half of councils did not have a cybersecurity plan. 63 councils did not have at least one of the following governance and internal controls in relation to managing cybersecurity. And that was the cybersecurity framework, policy and procedure, a register of cyber incidents, a simulated cyber attack testing, which is your penetration testing, cybersecurity training and awareness program. There was also a number of IT access control deficiencies that they identified across the industry, and they compound the cyber risks. The most common ones in relation to the IT control access deficiencies were not performing user access reviews and not reviewing the activity of privileged users. I'm sure over the years you've probably noticed in our management letter point some of these items. CTW does fare reasonably well in this space given its size and the resources that it has available. You've got a strong relationship with your external provider, and that obviously helps CTW to hit a lot of these, because it's no longer acceptable by the audit office to be, I'm too small, we can't deal with this. It's got to be addressed in some way, and there are many ways that CTW are addressing this. We've had the ongoing comment about cybersecurity framework, and it literally is only there because we haven't got the actual document, but we're very close to getting that and clearing that item completely. But there are many other cybersecurity mitigating factors that CTW are actively doing, so that's pleasing to see. Just a quick snapshot of the timeliness of reporting this year. Only 49% of councils managed to lodge their financial statements on time, so by 31 October this year. And that's been steadily decreasing. So that's compared to 62% last year and 73% the year before. Just the next slide, please, Gav. This is just a brief snapshot of the annual work programs for the next 3 years that the audit office are undertaking. It includes state government as well as local government, and the local government specific ones are up in your top left-hand corner there. Cybersecurity is up there again, and then the other three are not really applicable to CTW: road asset management, coastal management, reforms and park and pay. As I mentioned before, if you want any further detail in relation to their annual report or their planned annual works program, it's all available on their website. Next slide. Now for the report on the conduct of the audit. We've completed our audit of the general and special purpose financial statements, and I'm pleased to report that we have issued a clean audit opinion on the council's financial statements, which means that your financial statements don't contain any material errors and are presented fairly. As part of the audit process, councils ARIC have adopted these and reviewed them and are happy to recommend to council. This is a quick snapshot of your income statement and your key line items that have moved this year. As you can see, your annual charges revenue is a reasonable movement year on year. It's pretty much in line with your rate pegging increase. Your user charges revenue increased about $500,000 this year due to the declining wet weather, as well with the drier conditions. We noticed an increase in your stock watering results in the rural specific user charges. We also noticed in your other category of specific user charges an increase due to the Flyers Creek development and additional revenue generated from standpipes within this development. So when you look at your operating result year on year, we've got $1.13 million for the year ended 30 June 2023, which is very consistent to the prior year, just $40,000 higher, giving you a net operating result before capital grants and contributions of $0.53 million. It's just slightly increasing your deficit there. This one's a snapshot of your operating revenue by type. And as you can see, you're reasonably consistent there year on year for most of your categories. The user charges we just mentioned touched on just that prior slide. Interest revenue and your other income, whilst they're very small on the graph there, they've actually received some significant increases. So your interest revenue is due to the interest rates. And your other income increase is due to a $150,000 increase in your workers' comp claim reimbursement, which was from a settlement of a disputed workers' compensation claim in 2023. This slide covers off a summary on your operating expenses by type. And again, it's very consistent year on year. We do note a bit of a jump in your depreciation there this year. It's, if you were to compare it to the prior 2 years though, it's very reasonable. Last year noted a bit of a drop due to your reservoir being fully depreciated in 2021 and the planned replacement that happened last year. So in 2023, we see the depreciation for your water supply network category just increase that bit in line with your expectations of the useful life of your new asset there. Materials and services also increased about $391,000. This was a combination of reasons, but narrowed down your big movers were in your raw materials. They increased $180,000. And it was largely due to a number of probably around 30,000 increases. But one of your larger ones was a movement of $53,000. In relation to maintenance costs for pumps and bores. The other area that saw a more significant increase was your contractor costs. It increased $139,000, and $70,000 of that related to increases in contractor costs associated with the required clean out of sludge beds at Carcor Water Treatment Plant. So this is your cash position. So we've increased slightly year on year from 8.53 million to 9.97 million, an increase of 1.44 million. And your 0.01 million in restricted, it still relates to your security bonds and deposits that are held by council. The operating performance ratio, it continues to be below the benchmark, but as I've mentioned before, it's not uncommon for small regional councils. It's very difficult for you guys to get above that benchmark. There is talk, I hear, of them changing these ratios, Office of Local Government. Brilliant. So I haven't heard any set changes yet, but they are revising them. And I hope that they consider the regional guys a little bit when they're doing this and bring somewhat of a tiered approach to it. That would be great. But I won't hold my breath.
Well, that would be consistent with the way IPART's now approaching the rate peak.
That's right.
I finally realised that
we need a tiered approach.
Yes, the one size fits all doesn't work.
No.
So
not applicable for all.
Hopefully that will flow through to OLG.
It would be nice. That would be nice. And it would be of more use and more benefit to everyone as well, the users of the financial statements. So we'll see. Watch this space.
Any option? Any option for council to comment on that or not? It's just they've just been internal.
I don't believe so. I don't believe it's not like when they put out a draft for standards or anything where you've got to. Yeah. I think you know. There's a few quite vocal voices that get out there. His name escapes me. The gentleman that prepares the debits and credits newsletters. I'm not sure if
Ken Crawford. Crawford.
Ken Crawford, thank you.
Man.
Yes. He's quite vocal with a lot of this sort of stuff. So I'm not sure. Yeah.
Just in respect of that particular issue, that there was a session at the Finance Professionals Conference last week where the department, the Office of Local Government actually asked for industry input around some of these things, and they were looking at getting away from the one-size-fits-all approach. There's different points of view about how they treat FAG grants as their own source revenue and all these sort of issues, and I think the department, the Office of Local Government, hope to sort of release something around March next year in terms of how they tend to move that forward, but there is sort of some debate going on about what are the most appropriate measures and whether the current KPIs are the best reflect the financial sustainability of the council. So there is work going on that. So we did have an opportunity to, in an open forum, to actually participate in that discussion. Yeah,
that's good. Yeah. The unrestricted current ratio, you've exceeded your benchmark well again there. Your annual water charges, interest and extra charges, outstanding ratio. Whilst this one's a bit unique for you guys, there's no formal benchmark. The closest benchmark would be the rates and annual charges outstanding that are in other councils' general purpose financial statements, which is 10%. So, you know, you're quite close there, but, yeah, just under.
And it's fairly consistent
year
on
year
at the moment.
Very consistent year on year. I just popped in a slide about your IPP&E renewals, just so you can see as a portion of asset renewals and new asset additions, which you can see in further detail in note C1-7. But your asset renewals were pretty consistent with last year at $750,000 this year, and your new asset additions were $1.95 million. You had a revaluation of buildings and operational land assets during 2023, and this resulted in a $1.03 million increase in those two combined asset classes. As with each other year, we've indexed water supply network again this year, and that resulted in a $6.53 million increase, which gave council an overall increase in their net asset base and the asset revaluation reserve of $7.56 million. I'd just like to thank Gavin and Peter and their team for another smooth year with the audit. It's always a pleasure. Makes it a very efficient process when everybody's well organised, almost anticipating my questions at times. So I thank them greatly. And does anyone have any questions?
Thank you, Katie. I have no questions, but except to thank you very much
you're welcome.
For the work you do for us, the thoroughness, and for your presentation just then. Also I'd like to acknowledge the, as you did, the contribution of the staff. And when you've got a good working relationship, it makes things a lot smoother.
So, definitely does.
And councillors, you know, all appreciate that.
We appreciate they're a small team too, so they've got plenty on their plate. But they're always well organised for our visit, which definitely makes for a very smooth audit.
That's good to hear. Mm-hmm. Councillors, any questions of Katie?
All good.
Well, it's actually a general question to the team. One of our greatest assets, which I think is not captured at all, is the actual water that we hold in Lake Rollins, the value of that water.
Mm.
I know, for example, the coal mines have survived as long as they have financially because they always count the reserves of coal that they have sitting there, which is now, they're all coming a cropper these days because they're stranded assets.
Yes.
Because people don't want to necessarily buy their coal anymore.
No.
But of course, we have now, we've got water sitting in Lake Rollins, which is our primary assets, what we sell. And we don't seem to account for that in any way. But we do, it becomes important because we're reliant on what is there in the reserve, in that reserve, and also what the weather is like at any particular time, which determines consumption. And so our inputs, our financial position to a great extent is determined by the weather. So we're going through a few changes coming up. We've got the globular water security scheme, which we're hoping to increase the size of our water asset.
Yes.
And also climate change occurring. Mm. So we've been talking about doing some modelling on the impact of that on our financial position into the future.
Mm.
One way of doing that would be to actually put a dollar value on the water that's held in Lake Rollins and model that.
Yes.
You know. It's just a general question, really.
It's an interesting one.
And it'd be an easy calculation because the percentage four times what's on the bottom of water.
Indeed, yeah. Yeah, if we're monitoring the levels in the dam, we can say how much actual money is sitting in that
But
bank,
then,
that bank.
Yes, coming up with the value like that, it could be calculated.
Mm.
But there's other aspects of accounting for an asset as well, like your useful life of the asset and how you're going to depreciate it. Depreciation is always a sticky point too, because then that has a big impact on your, whilst it's a non-cash entry, it has a big impact on your income statement as well.
I would have thought it'd be a non-depreciable asset.
Like land.
Yeah. Because it's...
It's very...
It evaporates, yes. But you could model, you could actually model that.
Or you could. It should come through as impairment.
I can see the lights going
through,
off.
Through you, Mr. Chairman, it's a very interesting concept.
Yeah.
In terms of it, I mean, we don't treat the water that's in our system at the 30th of June as inventory either.
Yeah.
And on the basis that, given you would expect it across the network, that the change would be very, you know, we fill our reservoirs overnight generally and what have you, you would think that there'd be very little movement in that as well. But you would have to probably try to look at trying to factor the value of capture that as well.
Mm-hmm.
It's interesting, there are some academics that are looking at that. Accounting for water in that respect. I haven't heard of capitalisation of the resource, the raw water resource. That's a new concept.
Mm-hmm.
But certainly to look at some
calculation. Well, it costs something to produce that inventory because we've treated it. There's a cost
and
associated.
You can sell it in bulk as well. Like there's that side of it too. I mean, I'd be happy to raise the question with the audit office. There's no other industry precedent to go with though. So I probably
wouldn't
hold
mention
your
it
breath.
To them. I wouldn't mention it to them unless there is an advantage to us.
Yeah.
In doing so.
It's an interesting concept, isn't it?
I think. Yeah.
But certainly, when it comes to our modelling effort, you know, when we try to work out the impact of the climate change on our, you know, our main resource and also consumption. This was one way, potentially one way of doing it.
It is a method. We do current work in that area in terms of sustainable yield calculations for the dam and so forth. So there is some accounting. It's not actually capitalised in the balance sheet or anything like that, but there are calculations done in terms of, you know, how that resource is going to be, you know, provide water supply over the period and so on. So there is some work done in that area, but there is an opportunity probably to do some more detailed modelling on that.
It's a bit like work in progress. You've paid to create it, you haven't yet sold it.
I know if you think of gravel stocks at other councils and things like that too, and they do, it's quite a significant calculation that goes on in the background. You've got your TIP asset on your balance sheet, and you've got a remediation provision that sits on the other side as well. So you've got your asset and your liability, and you've got your inventory as well, similar to what Peter was just making mention to. So, you know, it's not too dissimilar to gravel stock either. And I'm not across the reason as to why it's actually never been capitalised, but we could definitely look into it for you and come back.
Interesting academic discussion, but whether it's worth doing.
I think we probably, Mr. Chairman, probably better do our own research initially before we involve any third parties.
And I guess the industry, other water boards not capitalising it is a fair sign that it's probably... But you know, it's an interesting question.
We don't pay tax, so there'll be no tax.
No tax implications. Well, yeah, no.
Wouldn't that be changing the whole accounting standard though?
It'd be a substantial change.
Because I mean, you've got the farmers with them, the whole thing right across the board.
But they do with water rights.
We have had customers actually state to us that there is no cost to us because the water falls out of the sky into the dam itself. So there is a contra. There's various arguments.
Differing opinions.
Well, we do pay for it. We pay a license fee to someone for the
water
reserve. Yeah.
Through
Mr. Chair, I'd also like to thank Katie and Leanne and the team for the audit once again this year. They're always great for advice and always easy to work with. The flexibility we really do appreciate because we know things come up out of the blue. So, yeah, we really do appreciate that. As well as Peter and his team, because I know they do a lot of, obviously they do a lot of the work, a lot of the groundwork, and I know there's to-ing and fro-ing as well after the audit is completed. So, for the physical audit is is done. So I'd just like to thank you both for that.
You're welcome.
Yeah, yes, thank you. And
yeah, I'd like to thank Katie's particularly. I know we had some issues with the cyber security aspect, and that took a lot of work and representation to get that one across the road. So we know we've got to do some work in terms of documentation in that area, as Katie's indicated.
Yes.
But that was an issue which potentially could have been a difficult issue for us, which we resolved.
Yes. You're welcome. I like to try and get the audit office to see our side occasionally. So, yeah, that's my pleasure.
Well, that's good. Well, let's do the formalities. The recommendation on item 12.8 is that council receive the 22-23 financial statements and the auditor's reports. Someone like to move that? Yes. Councillor Cook, Councillor Rawson. Any further discussion on Katie's presentation or on the material that's in the business paper?
Through you, Mr. Chairman, I'd like to just mention one issue. There's one issue, Katie touched on it, and it's the depreciation, and we have had discussions at a council level about this in the past. But just to give some idea of the impact of depreciation, if we take our depreciation number and divide it by approximately 6,500 connections, which is very close to our current figure, that means we have to actually realise a revenue from each connection of $419 to cover the depreciation. I think that's a very significant figure.
Mm.
The other figure that's significant with depreciation, and I know we're different to general purpose councils, but our depreciation is around 35% of our operating costs. So it is becoming a very significant cost for us. And we do have this indexation and revaluation of the asset base on a continuing basis. Mm. So that basically, everything else being equal, useful lives and so on, and condition and so on, is actually adding to that depreciation number.
Mm.
And that has implications for us, how we set our fees and charges into the future, how we best manage that going forward. So it is something that we'll certainly have to talk about during the next budget, 24-25.
Most of our assets are depreciable. We don't have too much in the land and buildings category.
Correct. It's relatively small. The infrastructure is the big item for us, yeah.
And the interesting way of looking at it, then, Peter, 38 kilolitres per customer to cover our depreciation, and our average consumption is 190 or something, 170.
It'll probably be running, I haven't done the calculation recently, but it'll be running less than that now, I'll say.
Yes, yeah. So it's a very high proportion of the average bill is just to cover
depreciation.
The non-cash depreciation.
Mm. I'm glad you brought it up, because I had actually made a note here in my notes with the question, how do we fix this? you listed a few possibilities in the report.
It's a very difficult question.
Yeah.
Councillor Wilson, to address. It's not an easy one to address.
Mm.
We do split our assets up to components. We do... And it's something that we're sort of working with Ben on, as well as to make sure we get those long life components in with the long useful life, so we get the lower depreciation value. A good example is the new 12 meg reservoir. A lot of that work, preliminary earthworks and initial civil works to get that in place, I think there's a very good argument that, you know, that's a long life component of the asset that can be depreciated over maybe 250 years, but these are discussions we have to have, of course, about how we deal with it. But they're the sort of things we're looking at to try and reduce the impact of it, but there's no easy solution of it. And it's not unique to us. It's a problem that general purpose councils have with roads. It's a very similar one.
Do we have assets that we don't use anymore that are still being depreciated? Like, for example, the old works at Carcor, for example?
That's fully depreciated. We're no longer... those assets have been taken off the books, so we take them off.
Is there anything else that's...
Well, when you do renewals of your retic mains, for instance, we actually take the old AC mains. They stay in the ground, of course, because of health and safety issues, but we actually take them, write them out of the books as well, so there's no depreciation impact of that. So we make sure we get those assets. If there's an impaired asset like Ugarra booster pump, which was blown over by a car in the flood, we take it off, we impair that, we take it off. So we're trying hard to to get to control that number, but it's not an easy one to.
And if an asset has a written down value more than zero, and then we have to write it off because it's impaired, that's a charge against the P&L, isn't it?
Yes, it would be a disposal generally. Yes. If there's an intention to actually, to bring that asset back, like with the Yagara pump station, which there is, and there's money in the budget to do that, then you're putting impairment provision in, and then you renew the asset against that impairment provision, and it nets back to where its former position.
Yes.
Can I ask, where my brain's going, and it's not a question for now, but with that, when we go through the budget, we look at the, is it 70-30 rule about charges to...
It used to be 75-25.
Yeah. Does depreciation come into that calculation?
Well, under the new guidelines, that 75-24 rule no longer applies.
Yep.
So I was talking to the chairman yesterday about when we look at our fees and charges, whether we look at getting a higher proportion with the access charge, with the fixed charge, and try and bring that share of income up to give us a little bit more, less volatility in our income stream.
Yeah,
that, of course, has...
Yeah, that would be
where I'd be. Well, that's what we, as a council group, we've been, when we get to the annual budget every year, we keep pressing that. And if you look at the figures on page 66 of the business paper, where the water charges income over the last 5 years, access charges have gone up 197,000, but water sales have gone down 147,000.
Mm.
So the increase in access charges over that period is more than covered for the slowdown in water sales. Which
but we're now saying that we should actually be looking at the depreciation
into
that fixed cost.
Well, that was something, Councillor Cook, that we do look at all the time. As I understand it, when the pricing regulations basically come in for local water utilities, the idea initially was that the depreciation cost would be actually funded by the access charge.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the correlation. Now, if you look at our figures, our depreciation is 2.7, our access charge is 1.7.
Yep.
So we're about $1 million underneath. So there probably is an opportunity to recover more with that access charge, yes.
And slow down the increase in the tariff.
Yes.
Yep.
So if we get a 10 or 15% increase in access charges, we can balance that with just a 1 or 2% increase in water charges.
Mm-hmm.
We've also really got to go back to our long-term financial plan, because that's going to change dramatically with the interest and inflation, isn't it? Like it's going to be completely different now.
It's a changing beast. Yes, definitely. That's something to look at. And we have had lower water sales over the last 2 years, 3 years, probably leading into this year as well. Initially, for the first two water billing periods have been pretty low results for us. So it remains a bit of a challenge for us. But obviously, the weather is now in our favour.
Talking about Blake Rollins, I assume Blake Rollins is fully depreciated. It's been around.
Blake Rollins is not fully depreciated. It still has still has life left.
Really?
So I don't know exactly. I'd have to refer to Ben for that for the actual calculations on that. But yes, no, it's still an asset we're using on a daily basis. It still has a value in our books, and it's still being depreciated. Okay. Yes.
Mm.
And it's revalued with every cycle that we do. So. Mm.
All right, any more questions on the report or questions for Katie?
No, I'll just concur with the thank you to Katie and to Peter and Gavin for getting that together. And I'm probably sure Noel's probably involved in that too. And Ben.
Yes, indeed.
All right, in that case, I'll put those in favour.
Aye.
That's carried. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
And thank you, Katie. You're free to leave if you'd like.
Lovely.
And you're also very welcome to stay if you'd like.
Well, yes, Gav did say that. Your lunch sounds lovely, but I'm afraid I will duck off back to work.
Thank you. Thanks.
Thank you for having
me.
Yes, enjoy your Christmas.
All right, let's move on to item 12.1, reports of staff, closing of the office over Christmas. And I'd like to move that. Wilson, Councillor Cook. Yes, standard thing. Any questions? No. Those in favour?
Aye.
Thank you. 12.2, application by the General Manager for leave over the Christmas break. We'll have to move that.
That's a bit much, isn't it?
Exactly.
Yeah, Councillor Cook's moved that.
Thank you.
Seconded by Councillor Rawson. Any questions? No? Those in favour?
Mr Chair, I'll be contactable as well. I'm not leaving the country.
No.
It just gives the delegations to Peter as well, so during those periods.
Take the time off and enjoy.
12.3, did we vote on that? Oh.
I think we voted on it.
Yeah, well, I think we did, but
okay.
Yeah. 12.3, page 5.
No, the, I think we did. I think it was moved in second.
Yeah, 12.2, yes, we did.
Okay.
Yes, we did. 12.3, report on the JO board meeting. Someone like to move that? Councillor Ewan, yes. Seconded Councillor Best. Yes. That was a useful meeting, particularly, if I can just let people know, particularly the session of Parliament House, where we had the opportunity, thanks to the good work of the two members of the Shooters and Fishers Party, Phil Donato and Roy Butler.
He's an independent.
That's right,
they're independent. Oh, he's now independent. That's right. I'm sorry. Independent.
Ex-members.
The government needs their support. And it was pretty obvious that they were able to organise a lot of very senior ministers to come and talk to us, which may not have been possible through other members of Parliament. So, we had... Yeah, for example, we had the Premier, we had the Treasurer, and relevantly for us, we had Rose Jackson, Minister for Water, which we had a good discussion with her, which I'll mention a few things in the confidential session later today in relation to that discussion. Any questions in relation to that report?
Not a question, but just, Mr Chairman, now I just see we had some reasonable savings over the period through the joint procurement, which is really good. So there's a little bit of help, I guess, that's what it's all about. Yeah.
Exactly, yes, they're listed, listed in the report, including savings by member. And CTW?
He got 2.8%.
It was 85,000.
Yeah. It was, through you, Mr Chair, obviously we don't participate in all the projects and opportunities there through the JO, being a single purpose council, but we do get a great deal of benefit, and it's great for advocacy as well, as the Chairman just touched on. We're an associate member, not a full member, but we still get the benefit of the, as said, that advocacy piece, as well as the other savings for training and different contracts we're involved in, electricity and a few others. So, works well.
Yes.
I'll put one comment regarding Rose Jackson, the Minister for the Water. I was a bit disappointed that she said the Safe and Secure funding, there was no guarantee that it was going to go continuing in the future, and because the money hadn't been spent previously, there was still money in the fund. Well, I think that's pretty disappointing for us that someone like us can be held back because someone else hasn't spent hasn't completed their projects. And I think that's pretty not a good situation for CTW sort of thing. And we need that guarantee from the minister that funding's going to keep going into the future and not be cut off.
So, totally agree.
Very important for us.
And that reminds me, through the chair, there's a brochure that's mentioned in the meeting minutes there too, from the JO board meeting. I'll circulate that around to all councillors as well. And that lists all the projects in the JO, all water infrastructure projects, which they've gone to the minister to push that point that Councillor Best was talking about with the funding that's required for that water infrastructure in the future.
The only question I had was about the Globular Water Security Project. Any feedback from that discussion you had?
It was very positive.
Is that what you were going to discuss later on?
Yes.
Okay. I wouldn't leave it for later on.
Okay. Those in favour?
Aye.
Thank you. It's carried. 12.4, page 35, the Building New South Wales Annual Conference Report. Someone like to move that? Yes, okay. That's the best. Councillor Cook. think wearing one hat or another, most of us were there. Our motion, which we approved at our last council meeting, actually didn't get debated because it's apparently already on the books, going back to 2019. And Parks had a very similar motion to the one we put up. But yes, they weren't debated. It's on the advocacy platform for LG New South Wales, just how much advocacy they've done towards it. I guess we've got much visibility in relation to that, but it is on their policy books. Any questions? Those in favour?
Aye.
That's carried. 12.5. An important matter. The trunk main C emergency pipe replacement works. Someone like to move that so we can debate this one? Yes, Councillor Rawson, seconded Councillor Ewan.
Thank you.
Okay, so let's just, I think councillors were aware of this from emails that Gavin sent out, keeping us updated in relation to this. A, the problem and B, the solution. So whether you or Noel would like to...
I'll probably refer this to Noel, being hands-on with this project and front and centre. So, next one.
Yeah, so through the chair, we had that major break across Jack's Creek. It's an underbore pipeline. It was underbored using poly pipe, and that resulted from the floods back in 2012, where we had massive floods go through our region, and we wiped out 15 creek crossings that were pipe bridges. So they were above ground, and we had 5 failures of those. So as a result of all those failures, we did an underbore using polypipe, and that polypipe has only lasted 10 years. So it's gone from 2012 to failing now. There wasn't anything abnormal about the pressures that were applied to that pipe. It was all done business as usual. We had a sudden loss of pressure, which is a cause by a pipe failure, and investigations found that it was the pipe that was underbored across Jack's Creek. So the initial response to that was to isolate it, try and bring water back from our Goolagong bores, noting that the pipeline from Goolagong to Canoundra was initially designed to return water back from our old Bangaroo bores rather than from Goolagong bores. So there is an appreciable difference in elevation between Bangaroo bores and Goolagong bores. So Goolagong bores is lower. So therefore we needed more pressure coming out of our Goolagong bore surface pumps than what would have been available from Bangaroo. So there was an unknown of whether that was going to work or not. So whilst that was put into place very quickly, there were lots of trials and errors and understanding of the pipeline before we were able to identify a methodology that would allow us to bring water up from Goolagong. So yeah, a great response from our team that was on the ground. Luckily I was in Bali at the time, so it was a phone call that was not welcomed at the time. But it was congratulations to the staff that we had. As part of identifying the break, it was also a temporary feed. Understanding that those pressures there can get up to around 2800 kPa. So 2800 kPa is one of the highest pressures that we have within our system, and it happens to be there. Normally we would always use a ductile line, cement line pipe. It's got a rating of 3500 kPa. Poly lines is normally around 2000 to 2500. They are getting better in the ability to increase the pressures, but it was always of a concern when I looked at it as a desktop
review of how that pipeline was able to withstand that 2800. So it was a weakness that we had in our system, however, it was working. So the problem is, in trying to identify now to get an underbore, do we do another underbore? Do we now look at the polypipes? Are we going to get any greater life expectancy than the 10 years that we've just got out of it? Or do we go to an approach that is a known approach to be able to go out, put a channel through the creek and put ductile line in, which will withstand those pressures of 3,500 kPa. So that was the approach that we've taken, is to do that emergency repair to enable an 80-year life expectancy of that pipeline. In between that, of course, we needed to get water to Moorabool, because as you can see on the diagram, where that pipeline is broken, it is the major feed for Canoundra Township.
Yep.
So trying to get water back up to Moorabool, again, was a challenge. We were limited in the amount of water that we could provide. There was a temporary pipeline sourced of poly lines. The sizing, the most we could get was about a 125 pipe size, so we've gone down from a 304 to a 125 pipe. So there was greater restriction then on that. So there was no way that we would be able to use that as a permanent repair with that size pipe, because that is our feed, remembering that trunk, that trunk vein feeds water all the way through to Greenfall and to Yagara. So once that pipe was sourced, it was sourced from Queensland. By the time it arrived, it was another 3 or 4 days. There was temporary repairs needed too for access points. So there was manufacturing of blanking plates and pipe extensions, to be able to install that pipeline. We have temporarily ran that pipeline across the bridge across Jack's Creek. Our first attempt when we turned it on blew the pipe, so that was an issue, of course. So we were only using it now as an emergency use, a very limited supply to the township of or to Moorabool Reservoir, and we are heavily relying on Goolagong. So as a result of those trials and errors, we've made contact, of course, with DPE and DPE Health, let them know what's going on. We've been working in with our Western manager for DPE, Matt Pamita, who's been very supportive and understanding of our system. We have been able then to engage to do a permanent repair in a very short time frame by using a contractor that we have full belief that they, due to their earlier works that they've undertaken with CTW and our Kakaoto Orange Pipeline, there was many creek crossings that they've undertaken in a similar manner as what we're after in doing this creek crossing. As you know, that they were awarded the 12 meg reservoir, so we did have a very limited staff available, but we did have the experts that were undertaking those creek crossings on site, and we used them then to go out and look at the at what permanent repair could be done and how we can mould that in, come up with a methodology, get pipeline to site, get finished to site. So in doing that, we were able then to quickly get a budget price for us to put forward, which is what we have done in conjunction with our GM and our managers. And we've assessed that price then to be fair and reasonable, considering all of the options that we did have available. And I certainly do not believe that we were taken advantage of, which could have happened. But by using earlier works that are of a similar nature that was done back in 2019, and the availability of them to be able to be on site, mobilise and have the ability for us to get this permanent solution completed by Christmas time, is the greatest advantage of us getting that permanent solution up and running in a very short time.
Just a quick question about what length of pipe is being replaced and how deep is it being bored under the creek out?
Right, so the pipe length is around about 160 metres of pipeline. We have ordered additional pipeline in case we need to have shorter areas.
And it's the big...
It's a 375 mil pipe,
yep.
which allows us then to utilise that for our trunk main C augmentation that we have on our books for over the next 10 years. So that will that size pipe lends itself to the pipe size that will be used. So there is no restriction on those. The depth of it going through is relying on what depth the rock would be through the base of the creek.
Okay.
We're looking at having at least a 200 mil concrete cover over the top, plus then the build up to the natural bed of river that is there now. Mm-hmm. So the boys are out there, as people would have seen as they were driving past. We've excavated through. We are having some issues with water running through the creek. So it's hard. We're not getting into the rock for whatever reason. Now, the reason that we believe that there was going to be a lot of rock in there is based on the costings of the 2012 underbore, where there was it was a full rock bore through that was noted on that, so we believe what we were going to have to go through.
Yeah.
It hasn't turned out that case at the moment.
So it's just in the alluvium.
It's
sitting above bedrock.
Correct.
So when you encase it in concrete, it's just going to be concrete sitting in a matrix of alluvium.
Yes, so what we are doing is putting a base of rock down there now.
Okay.
So we're actually giving it a good bed of rock.
Yeah.
And I think that's about 200 or 300 mil of rock that we're putting in, that we've brought in. And that will now also enable water to flow through underneath that as part of our drainage. And then we will encase all of that down, including that bit of rock or the top of that rock, within concrete. So the pipeline will be encased in concrete. The pipe fittings that will be coming up the side of the creek will all be encased, and concrete will go into the river bank as well. So that will
sort of lock to lock it in. So
everything gets locked in.
Yeah. Do you know what the catchment of Jack's Creek is? Is it how big is? I haven't been out there, so I'm not sure the size of the catchment. I'm just thinking ahead about, I mean, I'm sure you've discussed this and you're doing all the right engineering solutions. I was just interested, that's all.
Right. Yes, no, I'm not too sure, sorry.
It's a very deep creek as you go across the bridge. Yeah, it's very steep sides, it looks like. It's sort of 2 or 3 metres, the bed of the creek, 2 or 3 metres below the level ground level.
And then the slopes come up. I think it's more like about 6 metres.
So, I think I know which one it is now. Yes.
And the bridge is named after a person called Ray someone.
Roy or Ray?
Ray. Another one.
Yeah.
This is where catchment management can actually help us, because the one of the concerns, of course, is that whether or not another flow going down through there is going to break it in any way, get in contact with it and break it. But it's already a very deeply channeled. Yeah, the original ground surface would have been up higher, and there would have been prior to clearing of the land, there would have been a stream level much higher up. This is where, talking to landholders about their catchment management, their farm management, like in the up above Lake Rawlins, but also elsewhere along our pipelines, is going to be useful, because that can help. If we can get a change in the geomorphology of the channel, it's possible to raise the level of the sediment of the channel over time, which is a win-win for the farmer anyway, and protects our
So look, we're concentrating on erosion, of course. That is our biggest concerns. Please note also, we are behind in getting our paperwork into the relevant authorities. Okay. So for us to do that emergency repair and get it through, By the time we put in the paperwork to get things and then get approvals to do things, you're looking at 3 to 4 weeks, which we don't have.
Yeah.
So this is where the conversations between myself and our Western manager with Water News, with DPE has been most advantaged. So they're working on their side of things.
Mm-hmm.
They've made recommendations to us to keep going, which is because of water, and they are saying water carding is not an option. If we take water carding as not being an option, we only have to have one failure of Gulagong, and we would be out of water in Canoundra.
It's a no-brainer.
Okay, correct. Yeah. So there will be implications. We are working through in getting those approvals through. Everyone is asking questions.
Mm-hmm.
We are limited to what questions we can answer. So we've got the methodology that we are using of the creek crossings that were adopted and been approved in our pipeline project of our car quarter orange.
Mm.
So we're starting off on something that has been approved.
Mm.
We are then improving on that when we're on site to see the steepness of the banks and what we can do about mitigating erosion. And that will always come back onto us for the works that we're doing. So we are doubling down on all of the controls that we can put in place. So we are going above and beyond what I believe would be considered a normal practice of those, just to cover ourselves off when the next rains come through.
Yeah.
Okay, and we don't know how that's going to be affected. That creek, if you stop and have a look, you will see the dynamics of the creek. There are big outcrops of rock on the upstream side, so that's on the Karkor side of Jack's Creek, where there is the water comes under Jack's Creek, and there's a big rock out creek, and you can see where there is erosion that has resulted of the water hitting that rock and going out and eroding off those other banks. So what we are doing is making sure that we have, you know, rocks, sediment controls, geotech matting, more rocks both sides of it. So we are locking that in as best as possible. And we will also be providing water to ensure that we can promote growth of grass as quickly as possible to spread itself around and bring that back into its natural environment. There are no trees. Because we are on the same pipeline route as what our river crossing was back in 2012 before it got knocked over. So we don't have, there's no undisturbed, if you like, land that we are utilising. So, you know, we're replacing what was in there, except for where we're going. Instead of being an underbore on that river crossing, we're going across the river crossing. So, you know, there's lots, as you can imagine, the bureaucracy of being behind the scene and trying to keep the paperwork up to the relevant departments.
Yeah, digging up the bit of a creek, I would think, requires a lot of work.
It does.
There's no fisheries issue there.
Well, again, that's another agency that we've been in contact with to let them know what we've done, and we are following up with the paperwork as we are going through. So lots of photos are being taken. We're minimising what risk it will be to ourselves in doing this emergency work.
Mm.
But under our powers as being an emergency, as a
water utility
for, what do we call it?
Critical human needs, and you're also providing drinking water to it.
Essential services.
Yeah.
Yeah, there are parts that we can undertake works without going through, as long as we demonstrate that we are running in accordance with the, we're not bypassing any rules, any outcomes that would be in place if we went through like a full DA and all the rest of things. So it was similar to what we did with Karkor Water Treatment Plant. Yeah, we were able to roll that one through by doing certain things, but the responsibility of us was not to put a DA in. It was our project, as long as we did those steps to cover off, which would normally be associated with it. Okay, so it's an internal control, not an external control from others.
One question for me, driving across the bridge this morning, I saw the bypass poly pipe strapped to the side of the bridge. That is taking water into Moorvale.
Yes.
And we're keeping our fingers crossed that it'll hold the pressure. how much water is sourced from there compared to up from Billingong?
Right, so the water that we source from, we've been running that and limiting the pressure through that pipeline to around 500 kPa.
Yeah.
Noting that we normally fill, at this time of year, we're running about 800 kPa to 850 kPa going through PRV9. Now, we've limited that back to around about 750 kPa by us having 50 kPa pushing through that pipeline. All right? So so we're sort of pushing up that way and chop it down and putting it.
Actually, I was going to ask a question about what pressure controls you have and how you...
A valve.
So you stuck a valve at one end of that...
Between the pipeline, that steel pipeline, which is holding the pressure, and remember, it's actually taking off to...
Up to Kidal and...
So where that T-piece is that's feeding into Phenomenon Pump Station to feed off, as you said, through to Manilka. There is a T-piece, and that's where the pipeline stops, and that's where
you can keep the pressure going out to Phenomenon.
Correct.
Yeah, brilliant.
Correct.
Yeah.
Noting, however, our normal flows for the water that we bring down, it's a lot easier to control our pressures when we've got a lot of flow going in different areas. When we shut one area down, we don't have the ability to move that water in different directions. So any changes, people taking water for their stocks and stock or whatever, filling their reservoirs, has a lot bigger impact on those pressures and the change of those pressures in that location. So it's not evening itself out and distributing it out in the outreaches. We're limited to one area only. So there's a lot of work done behind the scenes with the boys in checking that regularly on our telemetry and adjusting the flows from trunk main B, leaving our plant, because there's a 2-hour time frame. Any change up at our plant takes about 2 hours to settle itself down into where Jack's Creek is at the moment.
It sounds like quite a balancing act.
It is.
Yeah.
And once we've got it stable, which is where we worked on last weekend, especially with that hot weather, we did get it stable. So we're not getting big increases coming in, but we're in a positive direction and very sensitive about making any changes that could impact on whilst we are gaining. So it's a very patient game.
Yeah.
Thank you.
That's excellent. Thanks, Noel. Now, further questions?
Yes.
Noel?
So does it bring up a bit of concern about any other repairs done in 2012, if they come to the end of their life? Or is there any other ones we do a similar...
We have looked at the poly pipe itself, because, as I said, that... it is an unusual position. I understand why they did it that way, and why I believe they, in good understanding and belief, that it would be a solution for them. We rely heavily of trying to move that water through without putting our bores in, of course. So we have increased the flows going through there since 2012. We have certainly, when we look back in how we would operate our system, with trunk main K, we are able to move a lot more. We are prepared to allow more water to flow through gravity feed and push through trunk main K. Now it's been upgraded compared to what we were before. So the pressures that we are applying to our system, it's fairly constant, but they have been generally just lifting and lifting, all right? And when I'm saying lifting, I'm talking about 100 kPa. So normally we would run around 2,500, say, at PRV9. We're running around 2,600, 2,550, 2,600. So they're not big, but that's a lot. A small pressure difference like that gives us a lot more volume of water over a 24-hour period to feed through. So as part of our cost control and operating performance, we try to use gravity feed as much as possible instead of putting our bores in and running the electricity costs for that, as well as ensuring that the water that we are providing to our customers have got fluoridation on it, whereas when we, so we mix that water when we put our bores in normally, we mix that, it dilutes off a little bit with our fluoride, but it's still there, and then after 3 months it returns back to its normal flows. So that Jack's Creek has been a real issue for us. However, it's good to know that we are able to bring that water back from Goolabong now, even though it's very restricted. So there are methodologies in place for it. Addressing your question about what other points there do we need to look at, I think Goolabong, there is a big poly pipe going across Goolabong Bridge, and that's the end of Trunk Main C, where it joins onto Trunk Main, the interface between Trunk Main C and Trunk Main K, where we finish Trunk Main K. That's a large poly pipe. The beauty of that is that our bore fields are on the other side, so they're on the Grenfell side. So if we do have a failure of that poly pipe, we can isolate that off, still get water coming down from gravity to feed across the Yagara, and concentrate on just pushing water through to Grenfell from our bore fields. So
that's not right at all, that poly pipe across that bridge on the Lachlan.
And it's actually across the bridge.
It is.
It's much easier to get at.
Yes. And again, I take your point, David, but neither was the crossing at Jack's Creek that old when we look at it. So we're only talking about 10 years of age of that pipe. So sounds good. But again, the poly pipe that we're using at Goolagong, our pressures there are less than, as say, up around 2,000 kPa. Yeah. So 2,000 kPa compared to 2,800 kPa is a lot of stress on the same sort of pipe. It's a similar pipe. So I'm not believing that we've got an issue that we need to address straight away, but we certainly identified it, and we know that we can get water to Goolagong. Yeah.
So the pressure has something to do with the failure.
Would it have been something to do with the flood though? That's just coming up now.
I'm sorry.
Was there anything to do with the flood?
No, I don't think it's an underbore. So I think. Yeah, the size of the break, the pressure drop that we had in that underbore was very large. I'm believing the pipe has split.
Okay.
And like, we'll never know. We're not going to pull it.
It's
underbore. Shipping containers flooding down rivers.
The underbore is actually, it's bored underneath the creek.
It's buried. Yeah. Well, it's really buried.
So it's been underbored, so we don't disturb the bed, the creek bed, which is for good reasons, you know, your fisheries and your wildlife and all the other things, that there is less impact on creeks. Especially erosion, you're back behind the bank, so you're not disturbing. What we've got to do now is do that disturbance. Yeah. So that's why it's been very touchy. The weather conditions lend us to do this work now. Mm. Like, of all the failures that we've had, I would hate to, you know, there's no chance we can do it in wet weather. Look back a year ago, not a chance we would do this. And how we would get water across there.
You need less water, though.
Yeah, agreed.
No, but you're right. We're lucky that it's all very dry at the moment.
So we will take that luck, but not at Christmas time. It's not a Christmas present any other time.
Do you bund the site, or do you just, how do you do with the existing water flow to the creek, if you just excavate it around it?
Pumping over the top. We've created a bit of a cofferdam on the downward flow.
Yeah.
We're using pumps then to pump that over to the other side, and we've got a cofferdam on the other, and that's just natural run through. The problem is the gravel bed that we have, or light sandy bed, it's actually going in underneath and then coming up underneath. Water is in underneath. There's plenty of water there, but it's not flowing over the top, which is where we first looked at it. We went, your beauty. Thinking it's like rock as well, but until you get down there and have a look, you know, as we all know, with certain things, it's an unknown.
And you're restricted in the corridor that you can work on.
And we are very cognizant of knowing that pathway, we don't want to go out of sight of an envelope of where our pipeline route has been. That opens us up as well.
It's a seasonal creek, is it?
It is. It's a creek.
I'm just thinking about the fisheries that's on the side of it. And you're pumping
the fisheries. Even though there's riverbeds where you'd swear fish would never possibly ever live there, you've still got to get fisheries approval.
Yes, yes. So as I said, we are a step behind getting the approvals while we are progressing the work.
Yeah.
There is no choice.
We have no choice.
We have, we've looked at all the options. There's, you know, the questions that the DPE and that are asking. There is no other option that we've got unless we're prepared to put in another underbore, wait for a suitable contract to be available, or pier it and put back a river crossing like we had before, a bridge crossing. The weight of that, the pipeline on that bridge would, the weight of our pipe and trying to line it up with the bridge, it's not possible either. Roads and roads would not allow that to happen.
No, I think as long as we're keeping good evidence of what we're doing, photographs, written records, when we disturb the soil, what we are, the whole thing, so that when DPE or fisheries or any other agency says you've done the wrong thing, we say, well, you know, it was an emergency. We exercised our emergency powers, and we did absolutely everything we could to respect the environment there.
Correct.
Through the chair, I'd just like to acknowledge Noel's efforts, the water network manager Cameron, and also Corey, the water quality manager, and their teams, respective teams. Last weekend would have been a nightmare. It was. With the, and we're still getting the hot weather now. But they're monitoring the telemetry and doing adjustments over the whole weekend with that.
11 o'clock at night, 1 o'clock in the morning.
Really big days and nights. So
this one. Did you have to cut your holiday short for all this?
No, Cameron rang me up and said, "Oh, we've had a break here." I went, "Okay, what are you doing?" And he goes, "Oh, I'm doing this and I'm doing that." I went, "Great, okay, well, is there anything I can do?" "Not really, we need to get the pipe first and we need to get this, so okay, there's nothing can be done until material gets on site." So Cameron had that all under control. So once we got here then, and we had that pipe under control, Cameron was in charge of it, allowed him to continue off. It was not until that pipe blew that then, there was a real effort in, well, okay, we have to get that water back from Goolagong and we have to get it in a hurry and we have to, still maintain our safe pressures within our system. What can we do? And with that hot weather we had, so between myself and Andrew Paul, who was on call, as I said, I was getting Andrew out at 5 o'clock in the morning because it was bloody hot during the day. So we were trying to set the system up and then I could monitor on telemetry and then he'd come back over at 9 o'clock in the afternoon, at night. But we had these safe, we had a system in place to relieve that pressure quickly because if we blew that 125 pipe, we had nothing. Okay, so it's a lot of playing, it's not just a matter of, oh, we'll do this, do that. It's a matter of trying it, see what the results are. That's a bit of time and monitoring that through. Noting as well, we've got Pierce's scheme, which is a bulk water supply from Cowrishire Council, and they use that for a rural supply. So they've got, animals and things like that that are reliant on the water, especially over that hot weekend. So trying to jiggle things around. We're able to do it, and as I was mentioning to the chairman yesterday afternoon, the one good thing out of this is that when we upgrade our PLC system at Carcor Water Treatment Plant, we know we can actually supply water from Goolagong to alleviate the drawdown of water, and we've got the 12 meg reservoir to give us something like a 7-day reserve of being able to get that work complete without affecting or trying to source water from other areas. So there is only one good thing about this.
Yes. Okay, we should move on. But any more questions? I'll get one question right here. So we've had this mover and seconder, I think.
Yes.
The cost, $368, does that include the 20% or is that?
No. No, that's their cost that they've provided to us.
Yep.
To do the work as per a scope of works.
Yep.
Not knowing what's happening, we'll get a bit of saving because we haven't hit the rock with a rock breaker, but then we'll have the extra cost of actually having to bring rock in to be able to create a bed down. And then, and again, with the sides, it depends on how much concrete. I'd rather air on over concreting than under concreting. So
you want that pretty solid, don't you?
We want because everything tied in
and solid.
Great, and then we're going to have that rock.
No movement.
Correct. So the idea, I believed, if it was a rock shelf, we would cut through that rock, put our pipe in, concrete it over. Our rock actually stabilises everything, so there's no underbore. Mm. Now what we've got to do, because we're not finding that rock, is come back and lay big rocks upstream and downstream of where that concrete is going.
Mm-hmm.
So look, that's why we're looking at that 20% to give us a bit of flexibility.
That's on top of, in terms of what we're sort of voting, the 368 plus 20%.
Yes.
Yeah, okay.
Ability to go to that.
Yeah, exactly. So
we can't stop the project, obviously. Mm. Yeah. So
we're just trying
to cover ourselves.
Handle on how much.
The true cost.
For how much it possibly could cost. We certainly hope it's even less than the 368. Or is that a fixed price?
No. It's all written. It's a price generated from a schedule of rates. And so, as I said, LEED have held the same schedule of rates as what they use for building the water treatment, the 12 meg reservoir. So, and if you remember back when we did the first variation coming out of COVID, they actually held their prices of what the original price was too. So,
So the potential is 440.
Correct.
Yeah. Okay. So we're clear on that.
And through Mr. Chair, it's the final thing. We're also going to be writing to the minister requesting emergency funding support as well for this project. So.
Yes. Add it to the one for the Manildra Bridge.
That's right.
Yeah, and a few others too. Mr. Chair. Just one other quick thing was perhaps a silly question. I don't know. Are we insured? Are these pipelines insured?
No.
Be prohibitive to insure the pipelines.
All right. Thanks, everyone. That's a good discussion. Yes, Councillor Best.
One more slight comment then. Seeing as the member for Cootamundra is the Shadow Minister for Water, I think we should keep in the loop with that regarding the pressure on to supply the emergency funding for us because she's happy.
Monday. I had a meeting with her on Monday regarding Corragable actually, but then I brought up the issues we're having at the moment. And she's very supportive, Steph.
So bring it up with the minister and sort of say, well, we should be included in emergency funding. So,
Cool. Okay, all those in favour?
Aye.
Thank you. Gary. 12.6 Council Resolutions Update. I'll have a mover for that recommendation. Councillor Cook. I think I mentioned to Gavin yesterday that at least Councillor Wilson Cook and myself have been talking about the Bloodbury Water Security Project and the need to get clear on what our overall objectives are that we want to achieve from that, which relates to the second outstanding resolution and paragraph 2 of that resolution. We probably don't have all that much time now to go into it in any great detail, but I think the view was that we should set aside some time on directing to actually understand exactly what it is we're trying to get out of this. And Gavin, well, I spoke to Gavin yesterday about this, and there's a bit of a history to this. I dug this out this morning, actually. There's, when this was first being mooted, after, I think the history of it was that we got $1 million to do feasibility, just for Lake Rollins augmentation, in two stages. The first stage was a preliminary scoping of four options. Raise the dam wall 2.2, raise the dam wall 3.5, what it was, or building a new dam downstream to the same level, or new dam downstream to high level.
Mm-hmm.
And we did that. We got it in 1 June, I think 2020 probably. and they took 10 months or 9 months to respond to that.
Yeah, to get past that.
And they finally agreed that we could go to stage 2, which was to develop
final business case, doing the EIS and you know, detailed costings and all that sort of thing. And then shortly after that, the government, except what we've been saying for a long while, which was to combine that project and the pipeline project. And so what we did was water infrastructure came in. We had a couple of meetings with water infrastructure, and result of which was they said that we wanted an MOU, which we got. In those days, there was going to be a delivery deed setting out exactly what they were going to do for us and what we were going to do for them. But they then abandoned the idea of a delivery deed, stick with the MOU, and it's been 2 years since then. But what I did dig out, which would be a pretty useful starting point for what we need to do now, I think. You'd have this somewhere on the file.
Yeah,
there was a strategic approach to that. Advantages. That's the strategy. This goes back to June 21, our objectives. And then there was another document which I did, which had our strategic objectives, I think 5 or 6 of them.
Oh, good, good.
So we have done some work on this, but I think that's one of these outstanding resolutions. I think that it's important now that we sort of progress a bit. I don't know whether that's a fair summary of the sort of comments we've been making.
Yep. I mean, through you, Mr. Chair, my concern in our discussion was really just because of the fact that there's been a change of government, there's been a change of thinking, financing a lot of these projects. I know that you guys have been in discussion with the Minister at various stages to get her buy-in with this particular project. The Wyangla Dam project has gone kaput. We've now got a great opportunity to ensure and put pressure on the Minister to ensure that this project continues. There's money that's sitting somewhere, $6 million to be precise. And when I start reading things which says that, you know, that they're still trying to finalise, you know, that money, and this was money that was announced like ages ago.
Yeah.
Why is it, what's the hold up, you know? I mean, of course there was a hold up in relation to the new government coming in and they sort of stopped everything.
Two governments, federal and
state. Oh, federal and state, indeed, yes. And then doing the usual trick of putting hold to everything and then reassessing. I just think that it's a really... We're in a point of potential vulnerability that we may even lose this money. It's just not... If it's not embedded down somewhere in a hollow... Not a hollow log, but a now filling log. A log with $6 million in it.
Yeah,
yes, it will, with pressure coming from us to say, where is it, what's happening, let's move, we're ready to jump, we want to know. These are the things, this is the list of things that we want to have happen, these are the list of things that we've agreed with Water Infrastructure New South Wales, knowing that, in fact, Water Infrastructure New South Wales is about to be disbanded anyway. It's about to go, is that correct?
Yeah. I think that's what we heard. It's just part of the department where they brought together all their experts in water security project people who are expert in doing feasibilities and environmental and impact statements and Aboriginal heritage, and they all came together as a little strike force almost to help deliver all these water projects.
Yeah, great idea. It's a pity that it's going back the other way, but it highlights our vulnerability. Because they're the ones who've got control of money, whatever money is available, and we're the ones, we're the actual end users of this, we're the ones who need it. So my primary concern was just to make sure that we are really certain about what we want, what we need and what we expect, what our expectations are, have them really solid. I know you've been having discussions with the Minister, gainfully pursuing it, which is great.
I think the view though is that we should get clear exactly what it is we're looking for, because whether it's delivered by Water Infrastructure New South Wales or some other part of the department or the department itself, and when it's done and you know where the money's going to come from, all those things we don't know yet, but we'd rather I think we should just
get our own position pretty clear so that when all this happens, it doesn't come with a rush.
Mm.
Yeah. Through you, Mr. Chair, and we had a discussion yesterday, and with that background, with our strategic objectives, which Councillor Best will remember too from the previous council, we went through that at a workshop, so I believe that would be a great starting point to review those strategic objectives to see if they've changed or see if there's any amendments or if there's any additions to those, and we'll agree on those and then put that forward to the Minister, because we've been going to the old project team, the water infrastructure project team. They don't know at this stage, they're not sure what's happening with the, as in who's taking over the project.
Mm.
We talked to the regional water strategy teams where we're being told it's going to be progressed through the Lachlan regional water strategy. They're saying go to the project team.
Yes.
So we'll go direct, I believe we'll just go directly to the Minister because she has been positive the last few meetings we've had with her regarding the project, especially the Lake Rollins augmentation. And Chair may want to elaborate a bit more on that from our JA board meeting we had the other day.
Mm.
But it was very positive as in the project progressing. So I think that'll be great, a good starting point to review those objectives. So we all agree on what we want out of the project. Mm. And I've had conversations with Noel from a technical point of view, and if we could get that detailed concept design for the augmentation of Lake Rollins out of this final business case, that'll be a great step forward for us moving forward as well. So,
can I just, when the chairman did ask me or provided the paperwork to read, I picked up on a few things. The purpose of the MOU is the intention, roles and responsibilities in the scoping, development and delivery of the projects. And if you look at the background, it is Central Tablelands Water have been progressing the business case for augmentation project, and Water New South Wales were progressing the business case for the pipeline project.
Mm-hmm.
And then going over to, Metropolitan Mark, that's the biggest, 7.3, once the MOU is endorsed and the delivery deed is executed, CTW's Safe and Secure Water Program funding deed will be cancelled. And that's what you were saying that.
No, that's Safe and Secure. I can just explain. That's the previous $1 million we got when we were doing our little bit ourselves. We spent a fair bit of that, 70, three quarters of it.
Yeah, 370, I think.
There. So there was a $256,000 that we hadn't spent, and the idea was that money was contributed to the new project.
No, we had to send them back $61,000.
It says on the termination you have to return the money back.
We did.
We did do that. That's been done.
Yeah.
So, my reading of this, and we got emailing with David and Andrew, was I wouldn't be confident in relying on this. I think it needs an update.
Yeah,
that's the point.
And obviously we can push this forward, our objectives again. But the earlier conversations I had when they were going through the review is that, we'll have to, with the project manager actually, he said we'll have to revisit the MOU, everything else attached to that. And as David said, the delivery deed was in there as well, that it was going to be the next progression, but then they said, we're not going to proceed with that until that's more the construction phase of the project. The delivery deed will be in the construction phase. Yeah. So, and then also with DPE, as we all know, there's always a lot of turnover and changing of staff. So you've got to build up those relationships, which we do. But I think that'll be a good starting point moving forward.
Yeah, so through the chair, if I can just add a little bit more context to it. There was two projects that were up and running, one from Water New South Wales, and they got a grant of $850K to provide a water pipeline or a final business case, prepare a final business case to put towards Treasury. And they completed that, and they put their project to Treasury, and it got knocked back because they had not looked at other options. They only concentrated on the pipeline project. So Treasury knocked that back and said, go back out and have a look at other options. CTW, when we were doing, we had $1 million at a later stage that was granted to us from Safe and Secure to undertake a final business case. So we spent about $370K on doing a feasibility study to give us the options, and we provided, I think it was seven options. I think it was a do-nothing approach, it was do dam safety only, it was then to raise the dam wall by 2.2 metres, raise the dam wall to its ultimate height, look at building a new dam downstream at a height that would not flood the existing lake rollers, and then build a dam downstream that would extend their height to flood over. So we prepared all of those options and had that. So, and we had submitted, as the chairman has said, in June to DPE our strategic business case, of which they could pick which option they wanted us to move forward on to then build up on our final business case. So Water Infrastructure came along, Water Infrastructure New South Wales, asked the same question as everyone asked, why aren't these two projects running together? We agreed to it. So the funding that we had at that time was a total of $1.85 million to cover both projects. Since Water Infrastructure New South Wales came through, they boosted that funding to $6 million.
Okay.
They got money from a federal as a certain amount, and they got funding agreements with state governments. So then we had the change of government in the federals, and we had the change of government in the state. So neither of those parties had actually written to us to say, yep, that funding is now locked in, or we're maintaining that money. So Water Infrastructure New South Wales got to a $6 million price for the grant funding. Now, that's a lot of difference. So the question that C2W asked Water Infrastructure, what are we going to get for that extra money? That's a lot of money. What is the expectation? So we drove Water Infrastructure New South Wales as part of our Lake Rollins augmentation to have a detailed design for the raising, as a minimum, a detailed design of raising our dam wall at Lake Rollins to 2.2 metres that would enable us to go out to market and get an actual price of market value using that design to put into our final business case that would be presented for the Globular Water Security Project.
Yep.
All right? So that design is worth a lot of money to CTW because it gives CTW the opportunity to say, do we want to fund it if there is no funds available? If we find that that's a recommendation that council could put forward, or do we wait for funding to come from others to support that project? So that's the expectation of what CTW had as part of getting to the final business case, a true design that goes to market to get a price that gets included in the final business case that goes to Treasury.
Yep.
So all of those options that we had there, as well as any other options that Water New South Wales was needing for their project, would be put to Treasury, and then a decision can be made. All right.
Yeah.
But as quite rightly, Councillor Rawson has said, we had change of governments. Yeah. We're still having trouble, and I understand in our closed session we might get an update of from the minister on where we sit at that.
Yeah.
All right. Does that help at all?
It does. Yes. Thanks. Yeah.
And it's not at Cobar.
Sorry.
And it's not at Cobar.
Okay. Oh yeah,
I'm not sure I get that.
Cowrish.
Remember she was calling Cowra at Cobar.
Oh yes, okay. No, I've forgotten that. Yes.
Yes, Ruth was very upset about that. I was calling Gabon.
It's Gabon. No. Yes,
yeah, not Gabon. Yeah, Gabon. That's why Kevin went into interrupter.
Yeah, that's right. Kevin went into interrupt.
Yeah. It was one of those councils meeting with C.
Yes.
I just wonder whether we should, with the consent of people who have moved and seconded this, capture what we've been talking about here in a resolution. So the recommendation at the moment is that council note the council resolution's update. Well, that would, my suggestion is that becomes that council, one, note that the resolution is update, and two, progress item two of resolution 23005
yep.
as a matter of priority. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's a pretty shortcut way of capturing what we've been talking about, but it does put on the table that the council thinks it's a priority that we do get clear what we're looking for.
With the reasoning behind that is the changes that have occurred, you know, state and federal government, and also, you know, reviews, Wyangla Dam decision, and the impending changes to water infrastructure in New South Wales. I think we need to get on the front foot, yeah. is really the point. Yeah. Now's the time. Now's the time to really get on the front foot.
Those who moved and seconded that, would you be happy to accept that as an amendment?
Who moved and seconded?
Can we just read that, please, Mr. Chair?
Yeah, so the recommendation becomes, well, that council, colon, one, note the council resolution's yep. update report, and two, progress item two of resolution 23005 as a matter of priority.
Hold on, just before you read that, though, technically, number two says review the BWSP memorandum of understanding. Is that that one? Or is this
yes, that's it. Mm. No, that's it.
That?
Mm-hmm.
Or any update or amendments involve signing a delivery date. I don't think they're saying, I think they're saying they're not going to sign a delivery date.
Oh, I know, and this is in lieu of
that,
signing a delivery date. Yeah.
Yeah, but your motion is to progress that point too.
Yes.
But that needs to be changed.
Basically, highlighting the priority.
Yes.
That's the priority. That's really
all. Another progress or review, just through the chair, we could have hold a workshop following the February meeting with councillors to review the strategic objectives of the project.
I think that would be a good idea.
We'll leave it to you to how to progress it, but I think what council's saying there.
Yeah.
I mean, we could do a whole new resolution, a bit more targeted to the strategic priorities, but I think it's easier.
And having a workshop after our meeting, I think, in February, I think it's a great idea. Because then we'll have a bit more of an understanding of what is happening within the water infrastructure in New South Wales world. We may even have some more updates from the minister, who knows.
And maybe before the February meeting, we might have some draft suggestions, draft objectives or something, so we can progress it offline before we actually...
With some of that history that you've been talking about sitting there, because, you know, we have expectations, you know, out of all of this. We were told by various politicians from state and federal that this money is out there ready for us to dive in and do this work. And this is to our benefit, but also ultimately to the benefit of our consumers across the board. And it's all about water security into the future. It's really critical, frankly. We're going to go through yet another drought and then yet another one, and you know, this is all going to come to the fore. You know, we've got to get on the front foot.
Minister Jackson, there is a fund, a grant out for infrastructure for water, which he announced in line with the housing policies not so long ago.
But we are meant to have already got that money. The money's already meant to be there. Still, but there's still
money from the.
There's still fiddle fart. It's still, you know. Does anyone have their eyes on the money? I always think, where's the money? Who's got it? How much is it? Do we have eyes on that money at the moment? I think the short answer is we don't really know.
Well, it hasn't been confirmed.
Yeah,
well,
yeah.
We've chased the federal government as well as the state government, but we can't get confirmation as yet. Yeah, we haven't had confirmation yet.
So, all right, through the chair, I'm a little bit concerned about the expectations. All right, is this in preparation to put a formal letter to DPE or to the minister? Is that what we're trying to resolve? Because, as you've alluded, we're unsure who the project team is at the moment. So, anything that we're going to review in this MOU. Where are we looking at the next stage to try and drive towards?
Okay. My understanding is that at some stage, before Christmas, after Christmas, February, sometime in that time frame, we're going to get a formal letter which says, thanks for your patience,
yes.
We are now progressing the Bulubbira Water Security Project. We've now had funding commitments from the state and the federal. It will be delivered via we'd like to kick the project along, and we hope you're still supportive of this project and being delivered through whatever it is like. And we go back and we say, yes, we are. In fact, we thought a lot about exactly what we want out of this, so that when you're designing the way the project will be worked up, you're taking our requirements as well as Water New South Wales requirements into consideration.
Okay.
So we're ready for when they tell us it's on again.
Really, really ready.
Oh, we're trying to curtail my expectations of getting something for Christmas. No one's listening to news at the moment.
No,
make a major announcement to.
It'll
be.
I said before Christmas or January.
It's supposed to be December.
Whenever.
I'd be surprisingly
shocked,
but I doubt it.
Yeah.
You never know. Politicians might announce something and then just leave it to the bureaucrats to progress it while they're supposed to be on holidays. All right. Did everyone understand? Yep. All right. Those in favour?
Aye.
Thank you, Carrie.
Thank you.
Now we move to item 12. 7.7, the policy review social media policy. This is an amendment to our existing policy. Yeah. Someone like to move that? Yes, Councillor Ewan, seconded Councillor Best. I don't know if we need to spend too much time on this unless people have questions of Peter.
Through you, Mr. Chairman. This is the model framework that's been suggested by the OLG, attempts to incorporate all the latest, with the exception, I think, of AI, which is moving very quickly, the latest movements in social media and how people need to behave and how the code of conduct interacts with people's social media responsibilities when it comes in respect of CTW. It's a fairly detailed document. It will be distributed after today's meeting to all the staff, so they're aware of it and so on. But it's basically the framework that the OLG's recommended.
Any questions? Very over-engineered to me.
It is. I had a comment more than anything else. You know, the part 7, a prohibition. A prohibition on destroying, altering, or removing social media content, and a requirement that councillors have records of their social media content created during their terms of office management. That's a huge imposition.
If you read earlier, it's only related to their council.
I did note that.
Yeah.
But who does the records? Is it the council themselves, or does the council do it? Or I personally don't use social media virtually
anymore. Yeah.
But this is a particular.
It's a good reason not to do it.
Very good reason not to do it.
I think there's a failure in the policy, but I mean, in that it doesn't. It tells you that your personal. Social media account is not under this, but at some point there's, as a councillor, at some point someone's going to ask you a question regarding council on your personal. So there's no guidelines. There's, at what point it becomes personal, becomes a council,
It's a grey area.
There's always an issue with this, but I mean, like I said, you don't have to do it on your personal stuff, you don't have to record it, but if you have a dedicated that says, councillor such and such, that you have to
I actually think you've got all the definitions say that if you are known in your community as a councillor, it's still considered a council posting somewhere in that document. I was going to ask Pete if you could tell us what a record consists of.
Yes.
Is it a screenshot of something that you've posted? Is it a that's what I don't know. And don't have to answer now, but...
That's an interesting question. Yeah. It could be just the metadata of that particular entry or so forth, or a way that could be accessed if someone required that record. So,
it says, for example, a screenshot.
The screenshot can do it. That would be the simplest form to do.
If on our private social media we wanted to post something raised to council, we've got to get general manager approval.
Correct.
Yeah. But in Blaney, we're just going through this SRB process, and what all the councillors who use social media were encouraged to do was put up on their social media accounts the list of community meetings because not everyone reads the council webpage or the council Facebook page. A lot of people follow different councils, so we're encouraged to say, you know, dear friends, if you want to go to a community meeting to talk about this rate variation, Councillor Green, here are the dates of the meetings. Something like that would need to get GM approval.
And then you go back to this 4.3 where it drops in there and says the policy only applies to council officials' use of social media in an official capacity or in a connection with their role as council. So then you do that, then your private becomes your role as council. So then you can fall under the policy. So,
yeah.
Oh,
okay.
There's a grey area.
Well, I'm not a great user of social media either, but in terms of what Councillor Best has said, in terms of if someone approaches you on your private social media account for a query, there's nothing stopping you, I don't believe, under that policy to actually forward it onto your official account and then respond from that account, if you know what I'm saying.
I do, but I'm just saying,
there isn't any. That overcomes the ambiguity. Yeah, it does.
I don't even know how long posts are kept by, like, Facebook or Instagram or all of these other. I have no idea. Whether they're just sort of, they're in and out and off into the ether.
I think they're kept for, I think it's at least 5 years. I'd have to check the latest schedule.
Well, that might be appropriate. That might be good enough, surely. But, like, we don't have to do anything extra over and above that.
How does one access them?
Well, I mean, it's...
You can't go to Facebook and ask them for your personal data for the last 5 years.
Why not?
The practical issue.
Yeah, the practical side. Mm-hmm. No, I'm really, it's a policy, I'm just saying. We have a policy, but it's very in-depth, but it also has some holes in it.
Oh, I think this policy has a lot of holes in it. I think they're still sort of trying to work out how to deal with this. I mean, I barely use social media, and there's a good reason not
good
to.
Good reason, that's
it. Yeah, but I think that's a very, like, that's not the way of the future. Like, we can't say we're not going to do it because... We don't wish to, you know what I mean? Like, it's not the way the world is going towards social media. Like, you look at the...
There are so many different ways of communication between councillors and people, the rest of the people, and across the board. Social media is just but one. You know, it's only one way of doing it. But then there's many, many methods of doing that within social media as well. But there's, you know, internet, you know emails, there's websites, there's a telephone. You know, that strange thing which you dial it.
When you use a voice phone, that's considered social media.
Sorry?
When you use a voice phone, you're running your network through the internet.
Yeah.
So that's actually social media.
Is that considered?
Would that be considered?
I think we should move on.
Yeah. Okay. Well, so the thing is, though, that, you know, we're endorsing this, certainly to go out for a period of 28 days, that's fine. But we have a lot of problems with it. How do we express that? If you wish to,
you can make a submission as a councillor in respect of it. Yeah. And then we can bring it back to council on those specific areas and attempt to address it.
Personally, I don't think we should be doing it specifically for this council. You know, as in, I think, but some of what we've captured, well, some of what we've said could be captured and then delivered back to OLG to say, are you sure about this? This is a major imposition. And I suspect a lot of other councils, GP councils, will probably have the same problem.
I think a number of GP councils have adopted the framework.
They have already.
With the OLG framework. They may have made their own specific amendments. I haven't read that many of them, a couple. But there could be specific amendments here we could look at. But if council has concerns about it, by all means, submit it to Gavin or I. And, you know, we can seek some more advice. We can seek OLG advice if need be.
To clarify. Is this policy prescribed by OLG, or is this policy?
This is a framework with the OLG.
Is this sort of copied and pasted from some other councils?
No, this is more from the OLG framework.
Yeah, okay.
More than from another council.
Yep.
It's from the framework itself.
Okay.
Through the chair, it's got here an independence report or a challenge report as a guide. It's a guide from the OLG.
We have to have a policy.
You're correct.
We have to have a policy. So, I mean, it's a rural situation.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. You have to adopt it.
I think today I think it's reasonable just to endorse it and,
get it out on exhibition.
And it's got out for 28 days. We're not going to be able to see it again for another, for more time than that. Because we're coming up to this long period.
I think if councillors had a comment on this beyond the 28 days before it comes to the next council meeting, we'd probably consider that.
Okay, so you want to make it greater than 28 days?
Yeah, well, we might as well.
Okay. Yeah. 42 days?
Yeah.
When's our next council meeting?
I think our council's saying 42 days for Christmas.
Mm.
Okay.
Yeah, we're... Well, this is the reason I mentioned it. Because of how council has done the same sort of thing. We do have... Because of that long period of time, because we're missing out on a January meeting. We would normally have a meeting once a month, but we're not having a January meeting. I know that CTW has every 2 months anyway.
Yeah.
And you're only required to do it for 28 days.
Yeah, but you can do longer.
You can do longer if you want.
Now let's do...
42 days?
Will 42 days take us up to our next council meeting?
Decent.
Wouldn't quite take
not
us up
quite,
to
but it. That's perfect in that case,
That right. gives us 6 weeks.
Yeah.
6 full weeks.
Yeah.
Okay.
Thanks.
Okay.
Well, I'm
looking forward to seeing councillors' submissions on this.
Don't
go for it.
Don't wait for mine, though.
And don't put them on social media.
All right. Those in favour?
Aye.
Thank you. Then we get to 12.8 and we move straight through, just because we've dealt with that, which is the financial statements. Move through to 12.9, the investment report. The comprehensive report again from Peter in relation to the
page of good news.
Any questions of Peter on the investment report? Good to see interest.
For you, Mr. Chairman, it's probably a good news report, but that's the interest rates are probably still going to stay up for longer. That's good news for some, not for others. But that gives us an opportunity to gain a little bit more income over the course of the year. I do realise that with some of these additional costs that we're facing, you know, that will reduce the average funds invested, but we should still have sufficient to make well over our budget this year, and I think that'll be a position of many councils because of the interest rate regime.
Yes, you see, well, in the next item when we get to the QBRS, Peter's suggesting we add an extra 100,000 for interest for the year.
Oh, okay, to actually cash that. Okay.
I was just going to say to Peter, I thank you for your commentary, and it's like reading the quarterly essays that come out, because you've always got one good point, and I was picking up the thing about...
I've got 4 points and one good point. That's okay.
Look at the large level of drawdown out of super funds. I thought about that before, because we're saying that, you know, the retirees have funds and they're getting great interest, but they're also drawing down out of super, and that's a requirement that you have to draw down so much each year. So that's nothing... That's discretionary. That's
Through you, Mr. Chairman, I'll make a brief point on that. That's a macroeconomic point that was raised. I'm probably, I get some of the commentary out of the press and some out of the ABC's business program and stuff like that, and commentators and so on. But it apparently is a major significant thing that, you know, some of the withdrawals of people getting into pension phase is increasing as the... those people mature and meet their preservation age, and they're taking it out, and some of them are spending it. And that's one of the reasons why they're suggesting that interest rates haven't been as effective to squash the level of consumer demand. So you know, they reckon about $100 billion last year, last financial year. So.
Well, that's the whole point of superannuation. When you get to retirement age,
correct,
you draw down a pension so you can spend it.
Correct.
And that's mandatory.
There is a minimum that you've got to draw, Councillor Cook. That's correct.
Yeah.
You can take more, of course, if you wish. But yeah, that's a significant factor. I didn't think it was a big issue, but a lot of number of commentators in the Financial Review have actually picked up on that point as well. That's one of the reasons the economy is so strong.
Yeah.
Well, that's why I first heard it. So thank you.
Okay.
We're all better informed. Thank you.
Yes.
We'll get a move around.
Shake it.
I'll move and assist. Move, Councillor Cook, seconded Councillor Ewan.
Yep.
Thank you. Those in favour?
Aye.
Thank you. Carried. Now we move to the QBRS, item 12.10. Peter, I just want to draw our attention to some of the main movements in this one.
Yeah, for you, Mr. Chairman, sorry, I'm just catching up here, just being with me for a sec. I put that on the wrong one. Yeah, some of the bigger movements of that is, one is, unfortunately, with the access charges, the responsible accounting officer, which is myself, was overly optimistic with my projections when I completed the long-term financial plan, so I've had to correct a couple of errors there. I was too optimistic with the way I did that budget, so that's an unfortunate adjustment that we have to make, but I think it's important that we get that right. The other one is, after two disappointing quarters of water sales, and there's been a number of reasons. The first part of the year started off quite wet, but there seems to be sort of a structural shift in people are not responding. You don't get that rapid turnaround after a period of, you don't appear to get that rapid turnaround in a period of drought, and people get into water saving techniques and so on. When the water availability increases, it's wrong to assume that the water sales are going to increase suddenly as well, because that's not happening. So I've made an early call here to take 100,000 kilolitres off the water sales, which is about 6%, approximately 6% off the estimate. And hopefully, obviously, with this weather change, with warmer weather now, our demand will increase, so we'll probably get some pick up. But I still think, because we're so far behind with the first two quarters, that we're going to struggle to make the original target. So I've taken 100,000 kilolitres, which is $384,000. Yeah.
And the consumers have also got other pressures.
Correct. We have to. That's a valid, Council Best, that's a valid point to make as well.
Through the chair, just the rain events we've also had around the, I don't know so much in the Wedden area, but in the Blaney, maybe Cabon area, we've had some decent rain compared to the rest of the state, which has obviously restricted our sales.
That's a fair point. We have had a few of those, even though we have El Nino and a positive Indian Ocean dipole and the warmer ocean temperatures, and things are starting to work a little bit in our favour. We've still had these storm events that have actually reduced the demand, and fairly substantial storm events, you know, 30 millimetres and plus. So that sort of has restricted the demand as well. The other matter that we dealt with just with the investment report is, I've increased the interest income estimate by 100,000, basically because interest rates are expected to stay higher for longer. That's sort of a benefit that we have. It's not a good thing for, obviously, for many people in the community. You've got mortgages and you know, I've got debt. It's a hard thing for them to sort of deal with, but it appears that, you know, that's going to occur. So they're talking about changes in interest rates in the last quarter of 24 or early 25 now. So the question, of course, is whether we hit the peak with the cash rate at 4.35. The new governor of the Reserve Bank, she's said she really doesn't, she wouldn't hesitate to raise again if she feels that that's necessary to bring inflation under further control. There has been some reduction in fuel prices, I noticed, over the last 3 or 4 weeks. So I think as that feeds through the CPI, if that's sustained, I think we probably should get a reasonably favourable CPI for December. That certainly should help in that regard anyway.
So, and if Russia pulls out of Ukraine.
So is your prediction included in the average economist prediction they always talk about before the rates come out?
No, there is some there's some others that feel that there's going to be another rise to 460. And then there's some, certainly the Commonwealth Bank thinks, you know, I think that they think there's not going to be any more sort of rises, but some of the Westpac economists and some of the NAP ones think there's still some to go, and there'll be some period before they start to ease anyway. So the current level may be in for some time. So I think, as Councillor Best alluded to, these pressures are going to hang around in the economy for a while. So that may be reflected also in some of the issues we may have with collecting some of our water accounts as well. We haven't seen a lot of that at the moment. We have seen some indication that it's becoming more difficult, but you know, that's certainly something in your mind as well. We've got some small savings in workers' comp there, 7,000 in the premium. We had a couple of big works compass claims a few years ago. They're now starting to ease through the calculation, so hopefully that improve a bit more in subsequent years. Now, the only other thing there is I've put 30,000 in for the fleet fuel and servicing because we are running our fleet a little bit longer now, so it's costing us a little bit more in maintenance. And fuel has been, diesel particularly, has been extraordinarily high for the early part of the year. And that sort of caught me a little bit short, I think, in the plan fund there. So I'm just topping that up as well. And there's a small adjustment of 5,000 for the school's water bottle rollout program, because when that program was originally designed, we didn't actually know the number of students or how many bottles we were going to require. Yeah. So we found out that we've got a few more extra students that we need bottles for. So we've had to provide extra to cover those additional bottles that's being distributed.
Stop procreating.
Just a question, were you seeing any effects of the solar? Is that on our electricity costs?
I think
coming through yet?
Yes.
I know we talk about it later, but I mean, from the budgetary point of view.
I haven't made an adjustment for that, but certainly for Kinomidyne and the Carcor water filtration plant, yes, we have seen that. And Noel looks at those.
Not ready to put
closely. I haven't. I'd like to see a little bit more history first.
Yes, okay. Yep.
Before I move on it, but that may be something we can look at. And we haven't actually appointed the project support officer position at the moment. We're still working through the position description and finalising that, and hopefully we can do that early in the new year. So there may be a little bit of a saving in wages there. In saying that, there has been a lot of overtime with some of the issues we've had with Trunk Main C, Jack's Crossing and so on, so that'll probably offset that a little bit. So,
And all of that cost will go into the next statement, is that correct?
Most of that cost, there's been quite a bit of cost spent already in relation to that break in Trunk Main C. So.
Yeah, but that doesn't appear.
That doesn't appear again. Yeah, in the actual, correct, correct.
I might just mention a discussion I had with Peter when Gavin and Noel yesterday, just in relation to this. It's something to keep an eye on. We've got an infrastructure reserve which we use for infrastructure projects. We've been dipping into that a bit lately, and we will continue to dip into that a bit with the Carcor treatment reservoir, with this new Trunk Main C break, and there are other bits and pieces which are going to come up. That only gets topped up really if we make an operating surplus. And for the last 4 years, we've had accumulating deficit of a couple of $1 million, and we've got a deficit, at least in the QBRS, of 650 or something like that for the current year as well. So all of that means that we're not topping up our infrastructure reserve, yet we are dipping into it. So we had a little interesting discussion about trying to project how long, making some assumptions about the use of the infrastructure reserve, how long it will be before we start worrying that we're not going to have the funds to meet unexpected.
Through you, Mr. Chairman, we do make standard transfer to that reserve each year on a regular basis before we calculate the cash surplus result. So there is some money going into it, but certainly not at the level that we expected. I did do those after our discussions yesterday. I did look at these figures this morning, and that reserve restriction had about 7.4 million in it at the 1st of July 2023. Now the transfers out are going to be around 4 million. There's a transfer from internal restrictions there in the capital budget review document of 4289. 300,000 that relates to transfers out of the plant fund to fund the vehicles that are in the plan, the fleet replacements. So we're looking at about 4 million coming out. So that brings us back to about 3.5 million. And then, of course, with Trunk Main C, I've put a figure of 400,000 GST exclusive here in the figure. That brings us to a little bit over 3 million projected. That's if all the works in the capital budget are completed. I'd have to speak to Noel about specific projects, because obviously there's a lot happening at the moment. So it may be difficult to sometimes spend this money, and we do have carryovers from year to year. But that would be the projected end of year position on it. But
I mean, there's nothing we can do about it. It's just to be conscious of the fact that it's been depleted.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. No, it's a valid point, and it's a challenge and something to be aware of. And certainly, when we look at our fees and charges for next year, as we said, we need to probably look at the mix and we need to look at the levels and just see how we sort of. Obviously, if you get more certainty in your income base, your revenue base, that gives you more surety going forward as to what you can put into those reserves. Yeah.
Because, you know, if we don't have the funds in the reserves and unexpected capital needs to be spent and we run our reserves down, we're borrowing.
That would be the other option, yes.
Yeah.
That would be the option.
Yeah.
And not a good time to be borrowing.
Yeah. Well, there's two options. You can borrow or you can sell assets, and selling assets really not a... not a possibility for ourselves.
I don't think
or you get grant funding or emergency funding or you get some form of grant funding. But that's in the lap of the gods. Yes, you get that.
That's something we don't control. wanting to raise awareness of councillors about that sort of financial position.
Mm-hmm.
And one other related point, when you make the adjustment to the water access charges in this year's budget, were that level of access charges included in the
forward projections? So that will mean that there'll have to be an adjustment made to those as well going forward.
Financial plan.
Saying that, we are going to look at, perhaps this is something for council's consideration, but at looking at increasing it significantly in 24-25 and perhaps not increasing or very small increase in the user charge. But that's one option, but there's a number of options that council can consider.
Yeah, because if you redid the long-term financial plan now with that initial adjustment, I think there was a few years where we were in the black, but only sort of just in the black.
The balance would be, as you indicated earlier with your earlier comments, Mr. Chairman, the difference would be borrowings.
Yeah, yeah.
You would have to borrow more money to
borrow more money
because you don't have it in those reserves yet.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Anyway, that's. My contribution.
We need a mover and a shaker for that too, don't we, Gav?
Who would like to move this?
Yep.
Yes, Councillor Ewan, seconded Councillor Best. Thank you.
Thank you.
And I think we finish our discussion. Those in favour?
Aye.
That's carried. Now we move to 12.11, modern slavery risk assessment, coming on the joint organisation bandwagon here. I'd like to move that one. This would be Councillor Rawson, probably Councillor Cook, I think.
She's looking at, I don't know, she's winking, nodding.
Yes.
For you, Mr. Chairman, just a quick overview of this one. Councillors would be aware of the Modern Slavery Amendment Act in 2021, which meant that we need to look at our supply chains and see where the risks are of slavery or servitude or... human trafficking or forced labour is in our supply chain, and we've got to be aware of it, and we've got to change our procurement practices accordingly, which is it's very difficult for a council to know exactly in every supply chain, you know, where it's sourced and how it's produced. So the JO has got this project on, and they've been very, very helpful with this one to try and work through this issue. So part of the process is to actually send out a survey to suppliers, a supplier questionnaire, and rather than every council in the JO sending the same questionnaire to each supplier, well, the JO's got a database, they've circulated all the councils, and they're coming up with a database of suppliers, and they've done some analysis, I think thanks to Bathurst Regional Council, they've done a lot of work in this area to work out the risk. The risk areas, the risks are associated with the country of source and the type of supply. So they've done a little bit of a schedule there of which items are the highest risk and so on. So that project is continuing. There's also a requirement now to actually put a comment in your annual report about what you've done in respect of the modern slavery risk assessment. They went in the 22-23 annual report for the first time, but that's an annual requirement now. So the JA has been quite proactive here and got on the front foot, and we're trying to, the next stage is to do these supplier questionnaires. They've got this detailed database, and then to go from there.
That's good. It's a good initiative that all the councils pool their suppliers and come up with a list of the high risk areas. I mean, clothing is the one I see as a high risk
area. It is, Mr. Chairman. Yes, it is.
Do you know where that shirt came from?
Well, that's it. IT is another one. IT is another high risk area.
I understand the social aspect of it. I do get concerned about smaller businesses, you know, quoting over $100,000 and having to have something in place, which they probably won't be able to. You know, some of the suppliers for electrical equipment or something like that, they, you know, it's very difficult for a smaller business to know where they're, you know, they're trying to supply it from the cheapest source they can get it from to make the most amount of profit and pass that on to us. And, you know, there's a responsibility for them to go back and say, well, no, I can't purchase from you because you might be a...
Turkey
cops in there, so you can get a couple of times back from Turkey. But anyway, you know, $100,000 is not that difficult in some of our, you know, things.
That's the threshold, Councillor Best, that has been applied to this particular project. There is, I would say, there is a modern slavery commissioner that's in place in New South Wales, and he's been there's no understand modern slavery commission in place, but there is this position in place, and he's been out there making people aware of some of the issues. Does have quite significant powers under the legislation to influence people's procurement practices and so on, and to actually, I think, to describe particular sources of supply as being ones that are high risk. But it's a very difficult area to, I agree with Councillor Best, a very difficult area to monitor. You can make your best efforts and do what you can.
Yes, through you, Mr. Chair. Does this or is there a similar mechanism for our investments? You know, are we required to have ethical investments or have an investment profile which doesn't include...
Through you, Mr. Chairman, in relation to Council Rules, this question is, we don't have ethical requirements in our current investment policy, but we do stay with major local approved deposit institutions. But whether they, what they use that funds for to lend to specific industries, we don't certainly go to that degree. And I think that's what you're referring to.
Yeah.
So once we give it to the institution, they can deal with it as they see fit.
I just had a master's student working on a project on the ESG reporting and how good it actually is, whether or not there's an element of greenwashing. There's a lot of flaws in this system.
And also what you measure.
Yeah, and
because I'll tell you, we went to in the housing conference in Brisbane. There was the super funds telling us about how we're going to get the investment for housing, and one of the ladies who was the social super fund, the green fund, was saying, well, you don't actually measure residents' enjoyment of the amenity. That's not a measure. We're only looking at dollars. So until we actually measure other things other than a dollar,
You're not actually measuring the correct thing, and it's the same in the environmental space as well. Very often, it is just a tick a box. Do you review your whatever? You know, do you review the workplace? Whatever, tick. Do you check on your environmental credentials in some way? Tick, and that's used, in the in these broader schemes, which feed back into ethical reporting or the ethical investments.
I will say now there is a requirement, and Noel knows this as well. When they ask you surveys now and ask about compliance, they ask for evidence-based way to verify that you've actually done it. Yeah. You can't just say you've done it.
Yeah.
You show me that you've done it.
Yeah.
It's gone to the next step. It's not just ticking the box.
Very often, as Councillor Cook has said, they're not asking the right questions.
Okay, I think we should wrap this up. So those in favour?
Aye.
Gary? And try and finish the ordinary items?
Yeah, no.
Not the confidential ones. 12.2, water security drought impact statement. Noel's got a report there. Particularly exciting news about the 12 meg reservoir. Is there anything you want to add to your report, Noel? Well, I'll just ask the questions. Councillors, any questions of Noel?
Looking great.
When you give us all big spray paint things, we do Banksy on the side of the tank.
We've done a test run of the Woodstock pumping station. Is all
yes,
all good?
Yep. Yes, yes.
Woodstocks. I had a question about Woodstock.
Yep. So that's all completed. Just signing off on that's it.
Yes.
Ready
yes,
to go.
Just a matter of going through with Cowrishire Council. Yep. And again, time has been the essence to try and create that for all both parties to be there at the one time.
Okay. So.
I have a bit of a question. The beyond Woodstock, it goes down to the, well, there's a link to Carra's water supply, is that right? But from the river, it's not coming from Wyangla, is it? There's no link from there to Wyangla?
No.
It's only down to the Speedpoint, down to Lachlan. Yeah, okay. Now, I was asked a question about, obviously there's a lot of interest in cross-catchment movement of waters, and we have now the ability to do that, you know, through the pipeline through to Orange.
Correct.
Yeah. Yeah, so there were questions being asked of me about that just by, because there was a forum happening in Orange.
Yes.
And I said yes, I think it was down to Carra itself, but not to Wyangla, because they wanted to know whether or not there's movement of water from Wyangla all the way across into the Macquarie catchment.
Well, the position of the JO was that if Wyangla went ahead, one thing that ought to be included in the scope of the whole thing was a dedicated pipeline from Wyangla.
Four town water.
But obviously that's not going to
happen.
So through the chair, but remembering it's potable water, it's treated water, it's not taking water out of a catchment as a raw state and putting that raw water into another catchment area.
Yeah.
So it is treated water that is being consumed by consumers, critical human needs, it's not to go transferring that water to another raw water.
Indeed. So we're sending them treated water if need be, they're sending us treated water from their side.
Correct.
If need be, yes. Thank you.
Any more questions of Noel? No. I think Noel deserves congratulations from all councillors for getting the 12 meg reservoir to the stage where it looks like we're pretty well done.
Looks great.
It's very close.
We need a...
looks like a tank.
There'll be some ministerial cutting of a ribbon at some stage, I suppose.
At some stage.
Just get a mover and seconder for that.
Yes, Councillor Best, Councillor Cook. Those in favour?
No.
Thank you, carried. 12-13. Performance of the systems. Any questions of Noel on this one?
I had a quick question. There is one like, there it is, Grenfell. What's that mean? Leaking meters in Grenfell.
Yeah.
21 in one, suddenly bang. there's got to be a story behind this.
Might have the right man here, don't
we? There's got to be a story behind
through the chair. So, recognising Jamie. Jamie is a network operator from our Grenfell depot.
Mm-hmm.
Jamie was not the person that has been reporting all these leaks. it's a process that we go through when we do water meter reading, And the processes that we have in place is while we are doing our meter reading, we will report on things that are not normal, such as a leaking mains cock or a leaking feeding or something like that, or the meter. Yeah, we need further work to be done. So we take advantage of when we're doing that meter reading to report that. It goes back to the office. The office generates then the service requests that come back out and goes out to the, back to, in this case, Grenfell Depot, and then they will roll out as time progresses to clear off all those areas. So if I may say, we had a very
Overly diligent.
Overly diligent. Yes, person that provided lots of information at that one time.
Okay.
Okay. So we do try to share that meter reading around in different areas, so every person knows where that meter reading route is, mm-hmm. and that walk is. So we do those sharings around. So we do get this every now and then as mm-hmm. people change around. Others look at repairing them while they're there. Others wait and then report it, and then it comes back through. So it's not uncommon, but it's certainly highlighted in this case. Is that a fair summation, Jeremy? Yeah. Thank you.
Okay. So it's not a systemic problem. It's a reporting issue.
Correct. So everything that's reported to us.
Initiative.
Yes.
Yeah. Oh, no, I said no. Okay, a reporting. I was going to say anomaly, but that's not quite right either.
So if I may say, sometimes people will fix it there and then, so it's not reported.
Yeah.
If it's only a very small,
tiny thing,
and it's a matter of just doing that instead of having to regenerate any to come back out of it. Both ways are encouraged. Mm-hmm. Don't get us wrong. As far as it's up to the person that's doing that work to understand. You know, if they can do it that way, they can. But priority is to get meter reading completed in time and bills go out in time. That is the priority.
As accurately as possible.
As accurately as possible.
All right. Thanks very much for that, Noel. Any more questions? Mover and seconder. Councillor Cook. Councillor Rawson.
Sorry.
All right.
It just goes to show I do actually.
All those in favour?
Aye.
Thank you. That's carried. 12.14, maintenance of the systems. Any questions, Noel, in relation to that? One of the main things reported on there is the break in track main C, but we've done that. Well and truly. Any issues for Noel on the report? If not, put that.
Yeah,
did I get it? No. Councillor Best, Councillor Ewan.
If I may, through the chair, look, one of the things that we took with council to be understanding of is we have had a huge impost on our labour usage in undertaking certain things. The projects that get dropped off are projects like our reticulation renewals. That's something that gets dropped away. So whilst we continue to do it as time is available, we have dropped off on that. All right, so I'll just make council aware that is a lower priority than getting in and fixing things like Jack's Creek and other areas.
Right,
that
that's priority. That's acceptable, good.
Any more questions? I'll put that. Those in favour?
Aye.
12.15, renewable energy projects. I'd like to move that one. Yes. Councillor Rawson, Councillor Best. Any questions, Noel, in relation to this one? Mm-hmm. All good news.
Nice looking graphs, those.
Yeah.
Particularly chronometer, and that's quite a.
Yes, well, as Noel points out, we've got to wait till we nail the rest of the Lumbula water treatment study before we get all the stage two of the renewable energy at Garkle.
So through the chair, look, October 22, November and December was because we did change over to a different company for our electricity. That's why those graphs, so whilst they don't relate completely to past, it is giving us a good indication while we come into that summer period, the savings that we've got on. So it's more just to give you an idea of how we're going. Noting, of course, is expect a fairly high bill this month from Goolagong, because we are pumping 24/7 on that one moving more water than what would normally be moved. So it'll be good to see how that relates to our licensing. So as you know, we've got 400 megalitres a year that we're available. Mm-hmm. Normally we're only running around 300, but it'll be good to see how much we've got, because we've now included Canandra as part of our supply.
Yes.
So that's going to increase that. However, once we get the pipeline completed, we can reduce that amount because we've got our 12 meg reservoir to push more water.
Exactly. And we've got plenty of water in the dam.
We have.
When is the licensing rollout?
Well, let's. All those in favour?
Aye.
Carried, thank you. There's only one other item which I'd like to... Ah, here we go. No, we'll pause the meeting now. Thanks, Ben. Pause the meeting, we'll have some lunch. Ready to go? Thank you.
Yes, Mr. Chair.
Well, councillors, the meeting now resumes. We were up to item 13. Questions on notice? We've had no questions on notice. We do have an item 14, a late report, which was circulated yesterday. Code of Conduct Complaints Report. Would someone like to move the recommendation? The Council received the report on the Code of Conduct Complaints for reporting period 1 September 22 to 31 August 23. Someone like to move that? Councillor Rawson, seconded. Councillor Best, thank you very much. This is just a standard report. Any questions in relation to that?
Are we allowed to know what the complaint is
about? No, I think complaints are confidential, and the position is that councils generally don't get to understand or hear about complaints other than through this report, unless the complaint is founded and results in the reviewer making a recommendation to council that they pass a resolution. That was not the recommendation here, so the matter was resolved, and this is just merely a report on that fact. So,
thank you.
That's it. There are no more questions. I put that in favour. Thank you, Carrie. Now we move into item 14, confidential matters. There are two items to be dealt with. In confidential matters, 14.1 is the general manager's contract, and 14.2 is... we're still recording because we need to resolve to go into the confidential.
Sorry, yes.
Yeah. 14.1 is the general manager's contract, and 14.2 is the recommendation in relation to an extension of Council's mains in Adelaide Lane in Blaney.
Mm-hmm.
Would someone like to move that we go into confidential session? Councillor Rawson, Councillor Best, thank you. Those in favour?
Aye.
Thank you. Carried.
Starting now, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, resuming this ordinary meeting of Central Tablelands Water to report on the outcomes of the confidential session. Item 14.1 was a late item, mains extension, Adelaide Lane, Blaney. Council resolved 1, but council confirm the mains extension proposed for the connection to the property in Adelaide Lane, Blaney. 2, that the applicant contribute $5,100 towards the cost of this mains extension. And 3, that future service connections to this mains extension not be required to contribute to the cost of this mains extension. The other item dealt with in closed session was item 14.2, the general manager's contract, and council resolved 1, that the information in the chairperson's minute be noted, and 2, the increase in the general manager's total remuneration package as recommended by the review panel be approved effective from 12 August 2023, being the anniversary date of his current contract. That now concludes the business of this meeting, and I declare the meeting closed.
Thank you.
Thank you.